This week, we declare our independence. Welcome to the Midwest Peace Process.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you now. Ladies and gentlemen.
Ladies and gentlemen.
I have the pleasure to present to you
the Midwest Peace Process.
The world is very different now.
The Midwest Peace
To remind
process.
America of the fierce urgency of now. 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 Now.
Welcome to episode 79. Today is January 9th, 2015. I'm Jerry.
I'm Jeremy.
This is Rob.
Happy New Year.
Woo!
It's 2015. New year, new look to our website. A lot of our listeners are subscribed via iTunes, and that's great. But did you know you're only getting half the process? We have a lot more content on our website that never shows up in our iTunes feed. So take a minute and check out our newly redesigned website, now optimized for tablets, and fire up your email. Send your comments to feedback@MidwestPeaceProcess.com.
What's the website? MidwestPeaceProcess.com?
Man, you're sharp.
I'm on it.
I knew there was a reason we kept you around.
Straight man.
Sharp as a bowling
ball.
So, we were reading this article about starting your own micronation. And I thought it was high time we gave the Process Nation, our listeners, a place to call their own. So, 87 minutes ago, our forefathers brought forth at this table a new nation conceived in liberty. We will be issuing passports to anyone who stops to talk to us today, thereby granting them citizenship in the nation of, well, we still need a name. We haven't decided on that, have we? I'm going with Processistan.
I'm going with Manada.
My idea was Rob's a D-Bagistan, but that was voted down.
So, okay, why can't we do this? The notion of a sovereign nation within the borders of the U.S. is not unprecedented. There are thousands of acres of land ceded to the various Native American nations, and their sovereignty is recognized by the federal government. Some of these tribes number only in the dozens of people. So why can't a nation like ours likewise be recognized? Here is my proposal. Whereas roughly 25% of the federal government's budget goes to the Department of Defense, whereas defense from foreign invaders is a service we are not willing to provide for ourselves, whereas all other services provided by the federal government can be provided by other private entities or contractors, be it resolved that we, citizens of our nation, will continue to pay 25% of our current tax burden to cover defense and will secure all other services on our own. We hereby establish diplomatic relations with the United States of America and formally request that they provide an ambassador to our nation as we reciprocate.
I'm in.
All right,
okay,
a
so two questions for discussion, and you can bring up anything else you like. But number one, why wouldn't this work? Let's talk about the, you know.
Or okay. How awesome would it be, the other side?
And number two, how would the government rationalize its rejection of this proposal? Because you know they would reject it, but
yes.
What is the reasoning they would give for why it couldn't work or why they wouldn't allow it?
All right. Well, number one, this wouldn't work because we can't get Rob to bring a pen to the podcast, so we expect
well, you
him
can
to
vote
help
me
us
out.
Start a nation.
You don't have to invite me. You need me, though.
No, I thought this was our nation. See, you've already missed the point. This is our nation.
Oh, I'm in the nation by default? I'm a founding father?
Oh, yeah.
Rob, for crying out loud.
Were you not listening when I read that?
Well, I thought I still needed to be invited. I'm so honored.
No.
Well, maybe he does need to be invited.
Maybe.
I'm in.
That's, the jury
I feel
is
warm
out.
Now. Cozy inside.
Okay, so all right, real quick, let me read something else. This is on a website called How to Start Your Own Micronation, and there's a link in the show notes to this. But talking about the definition of a micronation, what is a micronation? And by the way, there's something that happens every year called MicroCon. It's happening in April this year in Anaheim, and I'm so tempted to go. Anybody in the country who has formed their own micronation, they all get together at this conference.
Oh, it's
to
like
talk
a UN of tiny
yeah,
nations.
Right, right.
Sounds
how
like
awesome
a furry
would that?
Convention.
So anyway, the definition of a micronation is on this site. And the author says, first, before we get into the mechanics of this, let's have a little definition of what a micronation is. A micronation is an entity created and maintained as if it were a nation and or a state, and generally carrying with it some, most, or all of the attributes of nationhood, and likewise generally carrying with it some of the attributes of statehood. Though a micronation may well have begun as mere drollery, it has the potential to develop into a true nation and possibly to achieve statehood. So I think that's important because, I mean, you know, we talked on the show before about the significance of us meeting in a tavern, right? That our nation was born in a tavern. Now, do you think the initial discussions were serious, or do you think it started out as mere drollery? Guys sitting around drinking, saying, well, we should declare our independence and form our own country. Let's do that.
Some of that.
I mean, you have to believe that went on, right?
But, I mean, it's a little different to say, I mean, there was a set of colonies that formed some kind of thing. You know, it wasn't just like some dudes.
Still, that had to form somehow. It wasn't,
but it was formed by fiat from the good old King George or whoever the king was.
Well, people fleeing King George to some extent, some of them.
Yeah, I mean, you had two kind of parallel vectors of colonization, right? You had the Jamestown colony, which was founded purely to make money, and you had Plymouth Rock, that was founded for, you know, religious freedom. And so our country is an amalgam of the two, right?
This, I mean, poetry this, you're dropping right here.
This is what you get 240 years later or whatever. Well, almost 400 years later.
Religious freaks
Rock.
And freaky capitalists.
That's right.
That's a great way to put it.
So, where was I going with that?
I mean, I think there was a... a section of land, there were boundaries, there were colonies, and there was what they determined was an oppressive tyrant government that they wanted to secede from.
Yeah, but I mean, at the point that, you know, like the common man is discussing how crappy things have gotten with Great Britain, right?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, I'm sure the first conversation wasn't how do we throw off these chains of oppression? You know, it was like, let's declare our own country and, you know.
Yeah, they didn't whip out the paper and the quill pen and start writing the Declaration.
I can't believe
right
that
there.
That's how it went down.
I guess I don't know about the drollery, but I bet they were like, why? I bet somebody had a little philosophical thought about why are we doing this?
Right.
It's like here we are, you know, making molasses. I don't know what they did back then. You know, making products, doing their own little thing, and now everything they do, they got to pay stamp tax or whatever it is.
But I bring that up just because, you know, we're obviously this is only a semi-serious discussion, but who knows? I mean, really, who knows where this could go? And who, looking back at the birth of our nation in a tavern somewhere or elsewhere, it doesn't have to be in a tavern, you know, who would have guessed at that point that the United States would become what it is today?
Well, yeah.
Right? And we look back on the birth of this nation without any critique of how legitimate the process was.
We're sure.
Right?
Right.
I mean, it is sacred in most people's
eyes.
Yeah,
right. And it's,
we've talked about that on the show
before.
And
it's become kind of holy and, like, irrefutable with the founding fathers, like, sent from heaven to bestow upon the nation.
Right. And so why is that, though? Because the three of us sit here and declare our independence, and I'm sure listeners are snickering at that, and most other people would too. But why isn't that taken seriously? Because our founding fathers did the same thing.
Well, I think what we would have to do, maybe a big thing, is as I'm not so sure about being encompassed amidst the United States. But you mentioned before about these sort of seafaring communities,
right? Seasteading,
right? Yeah. What if we went to the ocean and just declared ourselves awesome process.
Right, build a floating island and, yeah.
Right, and we would probably have to renounce
our... The island might tip over if we got too many people.
That's right.
I hear that happen.
Like Guam.
You know, and... Hey, special guest artist here.
What's up, Matt?
Hey, guys.
Matt.
Jeremy's listener Matt has joined us.
He doesn't have a microphone right now, so he's probably just going to eat Jeremy's chicken wings and drink some beer. So I like the idea of creating something separate. But don't you have to renounce your citizenship at some point? Don't you have to give it up?
I don't know. Do you?
I thought so.
People have dual citizenship.
All right. But don't you have to say no? Like to really get out of your obligations as a citizen and all your rights of protection and anything else it gets you, don't you have to say I'm not a citizen anymore?
I suppose that's one way to approach it.
I mean, I guess we can't start our own nation, and then somebody accuses us of something, and we say, oh, give me all the rights in the U.S. courts, right? We'd have to denounce all of that to be truly free.
Well, we'd go to an international court, but we wouldn't be part of the U.N. Right. Or anything like that.
No.
It'd be over at The Hague, you know.
Yeah.
That's why I like Manada. I mean, would the key be to somehow strictly decide who is going to come in and out of Processistan? I mean, is that really the goal?
We need to have a Department of Immigration, first of all.
Right.
We don't.
No, and the immigrants have to be just like us and people we like. And you have to pass the test.
Well, then you're out.
I know. That's why I was asking at the beginning whether I was in. Matt's already in.
Welcome to Processistan. We have declared this a sovereign nation.
Rob was supposed to print out passports, but we will
be issuing you a passport. You are now a bona fide citizen of our new nation. Congratulations.
I'm not ready for that. We need to get some ladies in this nation, because so far it's four dudes.
So far it's Sausage Festistan.
That's why it's Manada.
All right.
Yeah, I guess your thought experiment, I mean, it really, really raises, it's another way to look at a common theme on the process, in that really you are only expecting defense services from your nation, and everything else you think is superfluous.
And yeah, so strictly speaking, in Jerry world, I wouldn't even expect that from a government.
Right. Right?
I would contract that out as well. And you know, in all likelihood, if you had that sort of arrangement, it would probably only be the people who lived on the borders. I mean, really, they're the ones who are going to be responsible for keeping the angry hordes at bay from, you know, overrunning the country. Now, they may find a mechanism for sharing the expense of that with everybody who lives on the interior of the country, or
right.
You know, whatever.
Right.
But in the end, it's, you know, it's all those rich people with beach houses who have to defend the beachhead. Right?
Right. That sounds like Somalia-stan.
Maybe.
I don't know.
There is something about, you know, when you get...
Go ahead, Jeremy.
Well, so your two questions, why wouldn't it work, and how would the government rationalize rejecting it?
Yeah.
They reject anything that's going to take money from them, sort of, in a way, you know... Look at Ruby Ridge or any of those places that were, let's call them a nation of their own, Waco. Well, there's shady business going on in there. We need to end that.
Yeah.
Well, was anything really going on in there that
you think
was
that,
somehow harming the United States?
But you think Waco was financially motivated?
They were allegedly stockpiling weapons and ammunition, which...
Okay.
Is well within their rights to do, so...
Right, but it wasn't financial.
I'm not... Rob, would you pay attention to...
You just said...
That was one aspect of
okay.
it. I said, also, how... Whatever they were doing, how was that deemed harmful to the United States?
Yeah.
Are you here now?
I can't explain that.
Okay, so that's my point. Anytime they decide, well, this is harmful, why is it harmful? Well, it doesn't matter, it's harmful, so we're going to not allow this to go on.
Yeah, well, at no time has that been more true than now. All they have to do is declare someone a terrorist organization, and that's it. You're done, right? That's why that's so dangerous.
But I guess, I don't know. That almost speaks to more of the Jerry point of view, where I mean, it's really just a law, and a law comes with it punishment. So however innocuous you think your law is, like you got to pay your water bill, or you know, you got to register for the selective service at 18, whatever it is, whatever the tiny law is, at some point, if you take it far enough, there's right. somebody with a big gun that's trying to be a bigger gun than you that's going right. to make you follow that law.
It's the gun in the room.
Right. So yeah, I think that's what they deemed you know, harmful to the government was a broken law.
Yeah, so
that's why it wouldn't work. So thanks for making my point.
Well, so which law would we break?
Well, okay, that's not what I meant by work. Why wouldn't it work?
Why wouldn't it function like you want it to be?
I mean, as a nation, why wouldn't it work? Why wouldn't it satisfy all of the standard definitions of what a nation is?
Well, I guess one thing is, could we trade with other nations? It's hard with export laws to nations and state departments and negotiations between nations. And
I don't know. Have you bought anything off eBay recently?
I have not. You can buy it from anywhere?
Yeah. I mean, you buy stuff that, you know.
So would that be our main trade mechanism?
It's manufactured in China. It's shipped from China. You know, when you get it, it's in a box that has a customs label on it that says it's printer parts or something. I mean, there's some generic description of what's in the box. It has no bearing on what you actually bought, but that's what they print on there to get it through U.S. Customs.
So, if, Rob, for your country, you'd have a website called Man Bay that would allow you to...
I like Man Bay.
Yeah. Yeah, you do.
Snippet that for the end of your highlight show.
I don't know. We need a baseball team.
We need a baseball. We'd be probably the worst baseball team.
What was the I'll have to look up the Frank Zappa quote, because he said something about to be a country, you have to have your own currency, and you have to have your own beer. It's essential that you have your own beer.
So what's the smallest nation on earth that we wouldn't call a micronation of a bunch of dudes?
The Vatican.
You mean that's
San
actually
Marino?
Recognized?
Right.
I think population-wise, San Marino might be...
So wait, should we just move there? And it's like shareholders. Like, we got a really tiny share in America, but maybe over there, hey, I'm 13% right now.
Right. Well, that was the idea behind the Free State Project, right?
Yeah.
Move a bunch of people to New Hampshire and take over the state and, you know, repeal all the laws and...
Did it work?
Well, they're still working on it. I mean, the original, you know, the original charter was to get 10,000 people to agree to move. Mm-hmm. They haven't reached 10,000 goal yet. I think they're at 2,500 or something. And that's taken 15 years to get to that point. So, you know.
That's a good pick.
Seems like the attrition rate might...
I think we've mentioned this before in the process, but nobody listens to more than a few episodes. I mean, it is striking up there. I used to live in Vermont. The difference between Vermont and New Hampshire, I mean, it's almost poetic and beautiful. I mean, the two states are the same shape, flipped upside down, and they seem to be polar opposites of each other. Yeah. It's like the terrain is the same. I mean, the weather's the same. Everything's the same. That seems like it would matter, but the feeling, the culture is completely different. New Hampshire rocks the Live Free or Die. They have the no helmet laws for the motorcycles.
Right.
There's billboards everywhere. Vermont's got the law no billboards. I don't know if you've ever been to Vermont, but it's classic statism, right? They said, we will not have billboards in our state. So you drive through the highways, there's not a billboard in sight. It's just hills and trees. It's lovely.
Why is it lovely? Because some government said you will not. I don't care where your land is.
You will not subsidize our highways with billboards.
With a big old, and you know, you drive through Missouri and it's capitalism at its best, right? You got the big billboard with the nudie bar,
right?
Driving with your kid with the gentleman's lounge billboard. What's that, Dad? Nothing. XXX means poison.
Your mom and I met, son.
That's right.
Yeah. So let's be clear, that's only the western half of the state that does that. What is up with you people out in Kansas City?
Oh, you people?
And yeah, you people. And western Missouri.
And that's the whole New Hampshire thing. But hey, I mean, don't you feel a little St. Louis inferiority? We've had our little issues. Kind of had our little dirty laundry kind of aired out at Thanksgiving. You know, didn't feel so good. What's Kansas City doing? They're like, Power and Light District, everybody. Our MLS team won the championship. Royals are in the World Series. Like, I don't think we get to – I'm feeling a little down. I don't think we get to little snub our nose at the KC anymore.
We can't criticize.
Well, one good year doesn't erase all the – you know how people normally mispronounce Kansas City, so that's
how?
Not erased. Well, I can't say it on the air here.
I don't know. This joke.
Kansas shitty?
Oh.
Told you I couldn't. Oh, way to go, Jeremy. Now I have to edit that out.
You can bleep it out.
Heard that since I was a kid. You guys haven't heard that before?
No. Actually, I haven't.
It's just our family.
All right.
It's good to have a brother here to give us a historical perspective.
All right, we're going to take a quick break, and when we come back, we will continue recruiting for our Micro Nation, and then we'll cover some listener feedback, so stay with us. To continue our discussion of our new nation here briefly, I wanted to talk about government's reaction to us declaring our independence. If you think back over the history of organized religion, say going back to the Reformation and the first major conflict that the Catholic Church had to deal with, and then follow that as the Protestant denominations continued to splinter further and further. To me, there's a lot of parallels between that and governments, because you have people of like mind joining together for a common cause, and then as time goes on, they realize, well, maybe we don't agree about everything. You know, and certain issues become a schism between them.
Right.
And then that group splinters, right?
Give us some examples.
Well, I'm just saying, you started out with there was just Catholics, and then there were Catholics and Lutherans.
I mean, in then, politics and nations.
Okay, well.
East and West Virginia. I mean, Virginia and West Virginia.
I mean, the United States, the creation of the United States was essentially us breaking off from Great Britain and forming our own country. Mm-hmm. And our country is made up of a bunch of, you know, collectives that were colonies then. They're now states, some of which formed for philosophical reasons, because they disagreed with the way the other states were done. I mean, Pennsylvania comes to mind as a state that was, you know, going to be wide open as far as religious freedom went. Other states weren't quite as tolerant. So my point in bringing that up is a church is going to fracture over and over and over again until finally you get down to some atomic unit of people that all agree on whatever it is that they're, you know, that causes them to be a group in the first place, right? And then you see what we're seeing today with churches merging now, you know, churches with similar backgrounds or similar philosophies merging back together again and, you know, forming larger organizations. You don't necessarily see that with states over time. But to me, in my mind, if you follow this to its logical conclusion, and I think I've talked about this on the show before, you eventually get down to a single person, right? Like the government, the only government that is going to work for me is the one that I come up with on my own, right?
Yeah, the question is the timeline on that compared to a lifespan. Is that which one ends first?
Yeah.
So
do I live long enough to...
Yeah, do I live long enough to be my own government?
I quibble with your initial claim that things are becoming more and more fragmented. I mean, I don't see that in politics and states.
We do in Colorado.
How so?
North Colorado?
I haven't heard of North Colorado.
All right, well... There are efforts in Colorado. Colorado's not the only state. But splitting the state into pieces. California is another one.
Yeah, California.
Because of fundamental differences.
Right. I am somewhat fascinated with Colorado. I've been there once, but I still...
All right, so go on with your point.
I feel like Colorado is... I think Colorado is the biggest one because I often think of Colorado with
No, Alaska is the
biggest
one.
That's right. Colorado, I think about the most because I'm, I've never even been to these towns, but I think of the difference between a Boulder and a Colorado Springs. I mean, I think those are those are epochs apart in terms of, that's time. That's a time unit. Okay.
Some people call it an epic.
They're way apart. I mean, I understand Boulder, you're smoking your hemp and you got your, you know, you're hanging out at CU and you... smoking a dube and you're like got a hemp bracelet on. Colorado Springs, you got that's the home of the mega church. I mean, Utah has the Salt Lake City as your liberal bastion amongst them, you know, the Mormon masses, you know, and you also have that kind of in Wisconsin where you have kind of a Madison, like a liberal, like hotbed, and all the liberals in Wisconsin are like, oh my god, how did I end up in Wisconsin? I'm gonna go to Madison, you know, so everybody just sort of shows up and liberals around together, you know, in a little volcano nugget of. Liberalism?
We've turned liberal into a verb.
But it's somehow different in the Colorado where you have these differences. But I guess I don't see it in the statism. And, you know, if you think of Putin's actions, I mean, there seems to be more, or ISIS, like they want to more break down borders and gain control and territory. I don't think ISIS is about individual freedom. And
No, certainly not.
So I guess I disagree with your claim that the progress of history is pointing towards... governments that are smaller and smaller.
Picture it, this ISIS wants, they want like-minded people. And if you're not like-minded, they will make you or kill you.
That's not individual freedom that Jerry's talking about that he said in his little speech there.
Right.
I guess I quibble with your thought that the arc of history is tending towards individual freedom. I mean, I'm not seeing it.
No, I agree. It's not.
Okay.
And maybe I wasn't clear. What in drawing the parallel to religion, you know, maybe my religious beliefs are unique enough that eventually my church would splinter over and over and over again until I was a church of one.
Okay.
Okay. My beliefs, I don't share them with anyone else, so I have to form my own church just for me. Okay. The same would be true. Of my political philosophy, right? If I couldn't find anybody else who agreed with my approach to living my life and, you know, whatnot, then I'd have to form my own little micronation of just me, right? But that's not true. I mean, there are plenty of people of like mind with me, with all of us, you know. And if we had a mechanism for eventually hooking up with those people, we might form our own little micronations, mm-hmm. right?
Right.
To affect change, to just live our lives the way we wanted to live them, okay? Government is not going to allow that to happen because government is, I mean, they've declared a monopoly on the use of force. They don't like competition when it comes to that. And as Jeremy pointed out earlier, they certainly don't like the loss of revenue that it represents. So, you know, in my mind, the answer to that question is how would government rationalize rejection of letting people splinter off and become their own little micronations? Even if we followed my proposal, right, and we're willing to pay 25% of what we paid before in taxes to cover our defense, right, they're not going to go for that because it's a loss of revenue, but they're not going to say that. The cover story is going to be that, you know,
might harm yourself, and we will protect you from the harm you're going to do to yourself.
Either that or it's, well, everybody's got to pay their fair share, right? Well, that is the fair share if the only service I'm using is the Department of Defense.
Would it be the only service?
Well, but, yeah, I mean, think of the road. We didn't build that nation, you know?
We did. That's the thing. Everyone
did.
I did.
Fell into the trap. I love it.
I got your joke, but you would have to. That's why you couldn't use the land it was built on, because that land it's built on is protected by air laws and
okay, but a micronation exists in a logical sense, right? It's not a physical place necessarily.
It could be taxes.
It could be eventually, but when at the birth, I mean, right here, right now, tonight, when we declared our nation at this table, it exists logically. It's not a physical space yet, but all of us are members of this micronation. So,
I don't think you can divorce yourself from what's around you. I mean, we're in here with heat and well, laws, and there's something that's okay, protecting.
See,
I think that guy over there from punching me.
I think that
punch me.
No,
I think
not.
That is the. I think that's the false. The false programming that we've all received
that
the government has to be tied to a geographical region.
I think that's true, but I think you're. I think, and a theme of the podcast is I think you're discounting. You're overly discounting what the government is providing for you that you don't see. Whether it's the cop that can come if that guy punches us, or you know, or whatever it is,
up my favorite.
Which one?
The roads.
You got to talk about the roads, or the fact that if I eat an oyster and it makes me sick, that I have a bigger claim against this restaurant than just the fact that I didn't have a good time, right? There's a FDA and a food inspector that can come. You know that there's
okay,
there's
but,
a,
but if you eat an oyster and you get sick from it, the FDA failed you, right? Because their inspector didn't find.
But
that,
I have a reasonable
oyster.
But when I order the oysters, I have a reasonable expectation that those oysters are probably going to be good. Not because they're worried about my $5, but because they're worried about the government coming after them if I vomit
okay.
all over the place.
But your claim would be true whether the government existed or not. Because this restaurant doesn't have the authority or the right to make you sick on the food that they sell you.
Yeah, and here we are. Go ahead, Jeremy.
I don't know. That was just a weird.
So
I'm trying to figure out the oyster analogy there.
The overall claim from the liberal against the anarchist argument is that we rebel against these government programs that we feel like we're paying for that don't matter. And so we draw the conclusion that the government doesn't do anything for us. And I'm claiming that there's a lot that allows us to show up with microphones and drink beer and order food that we have a reasonable expectation is going to be safe and drink water that we think is going to be good. There's a lot of things that the government is... that we're all paying into, that the government is getting us, that we don't think
that
it's going
to be good. The good water that the government has decided it needs to fluoridate. The good water.
Right.
Hey, it's good for your teeth.
I don't deny that all of that, or at least much of that, is true. what I'm rejecting is the underlying premise that none of that could happen without the government.
I get that. That's what we're still working through in the process. That if you had no government, you could still have clean water, right? That's the idea.
I don't sit at a restaurant thinking, "Ooh, thank goodness for the FDA or any of that."
You don't?
No.
I think these guys want to stay in business, so they're going to provide good food.
So they're going to make sure it's warm in here, that there's lights, that the food isn't going to make me...
Because if everybody gets sick every time, guess where you're not going to go?
Right. So it's the reputation in the marketplace that has just as much
capitalism
influence on their choices, their business decisions, as it is the government regulation.
For you listeners at home, Rob is scrunching up his nose and shaking his head side to side.
Yes, yes, exactly. Exactly.
Okay.
Right.
So I don't want to slight our listeners that provided us feedback. So I want to spend some time talking about the awesome feedback we got. Leading off, our listener AJ, he had
very bright man.
Yes,
based on his first three words,
quite a bit to say here. AJ says, "Kudos to Jeremy,
boo,
on identifying the hypocrisy, which I'll just call irony, that goes both ways. While I agree with Rob that the right supporting the Democratic politicians, overreaching government, and opaque justice system proceedings on its face is ironic." The flip of that is also then true, with the left reaching this way locally, but not to state and federal overreaches.
Beautiful.
As a self-identifying liberal, I'd like to take a fair crack at the three liberal tenets and how belief in them has led to failure in Ferguson, and how it's ironic to be speaking out against them now.
Bring it, boy.
Number one, the government has a role in dealing with market failures in the social and economic contracts by writing laws governing those markets. Number two, direct or indirect government representatives are a fair reflection of the people they serve. Number three, rules and laws written by those direct officials are therefore fair, and their enforcement is necessary by the indirect officials. Where these fail, lack of voter turnout, as most people don't believe the system works, so the electorate is a poor representation of the people. Lack of accountability of representatives in a flawed voting or committee system as the only recourse leading to increased apathy. Lack of cost-benefit analysis for the laws they write leads to unnecessary micromanaging of the social and economic contracts, and disconnects lawmakers and citizens. And finally, the police then become enforcers for lawmakers rather than overseers of the public trust and safety. Preach on, AJ.
Preach on.
These are all on display in Ferguson, but are not unique to Ferguson, as we have more social class segregation in American metro areas today than in the Jim Crow era because of the great suburban migration, as municipalities were allowed to zone out the undesirables in conjunction with federal subsidized housing and transportation policies after World War II.
That's just beautiful.
Yeah.
There's a lot to think about there.
AJ goes on to say, "I enjoy listening to you guys because it's fun to identify this sort of irony as it surrounds a lot of issues. Why does subsidizing the consumption of food through food stamp programs face political scorn from the right, but not subsidizing the consumption of single-family homes in the suburbs through the home mortgage interest deduction? Why do liberals sue the government for infringing on lawful free speech and the establishment of religion under the First Amendment, but don't value the lawful ownership of firearms under the Second Amendment? Why do conservatives want to sue the government about the overreach of health care, but also want to place moral restrictions on the types of medical procedures a person can have? Why do we say violence isn't the answer, but we celebrate it in our history? Why? Because if you're aware enough to ask that question, you need to laugh at the situation or you'll cry."
Nice.
Yes.
That's some quality feedback.
Eloquent speech from one of our listeners. Cheers to you, AJ.
Cheers.
I don't know. You guys have any comments on that? He pretty well summed it up.
I mean, there's great comments that we got a whole episode fodder in there that
yeah.
we could talk about.
I mean, we really could. We could spend a whole episode talking about that. Maybe we will. Mm-hmm. Our listener, Eric, had a couple of comments. Eric says, nice rant by Rob. Lots of good points, actually, especially about conservatives not liking the overbearing government, but liking the police actions. However, conservatives are also big on security, right versus wrong, gun rights, etc. So there's a big support law enforcement aspect to conservatives. However, about the union part, I'd have to have some references to see how conservatives are defending the police union. I consider myself conservative, and like Jeremy, I generally have a negative opinion of unions, and I would lump the police union in there too. So my feelings about Darren Wilson are completely disconnected from my feelings about the police union or how they handled the case. In other words, the actions of the police union in this case don't change my opinion of unions at all. People like overbearing government as long as they feel it's on their side. Quote, unquote. Nice quote there, Rob. Not sure if it's universally true, but I get the gist of it.
Rob used that as an attack on conservatives, but it applies
to
liberals.
I think it is a good quote, and I agree that it applies to both sides equally.
Yeah.
I mean, everybody likes the government when it's, you know, enforcing their ideals and their morals.
I think it goes beyond government, too. Everybody likes this as long as it's in line with whatever their agenda is or their opinion is, and then as soon as it goes askew of that, I don't like that. No, there's very little. Yeah, that's different, but it's still okay.
Eric finished by saying, "I truly enjoy the episodes and the discussion." So thank you, Eric. We appreciate you listening and sending in your feedback. I'd encourage all of our listeners to send their comments to us at feedback@midwestpeaceprocess.com, or you can send us a tweet on our Twitter account, or comment on our Facebook page. We are even on Elo, if anyone is familiar with that. It's an up-and-coming social network. Some believe it's the Facebook killer. That's ELLO.co. So check that out on the web. We are there at Midwest Peace. Any stories in the reading room we want to cover this time?
Well, the trees are absorbing more greenhouse gases than they expected, so that's good news.
Okay. I'm sure Eric will be happy to hear that.
New laws, okay wine shipments, but they ban tiger selfies. Kind of liked that one.
I am so glad that the government is regulating tiger selfies.
And that's why posted it to the reading room. Because
dude, when I read that story, I did a Google on tiger selfies because I didn't know that was a thing. But oh my God,
it's a thing.
Yeah. But I ran into the wine shipment issue several years ago. I was trying to ship something to some friends of mine in Georgia. And I couldn't do it because the winery couldn't ship from here to Georgia.
Really?
Yeah.
Like, was it all of Georgia, or was there like dry counties in Georgia?
It's like there are certain states you can't ship at all. Certain states will ship to other states. I mean, it's...
Wow.
I never knew there were any kind of laws like that.
So much for the interstate commerce clause, huh?
Oops.
Let's see. Yeah, I don't know. As far as stuff that's been going on, interests me a little bit is everything that's been happening in Paris.
Yeah.
And beyond Paris, a little bit in Germany, I think the United States takes a lot of heat for all of the racial tension issues like that. But I think it's coming, or in the past, it comes from countries that are largely homogenous. And now, when they're dehomogenizing, they start to see some of the problems.
Right.
And they aren't as pure as they... at least me looking at it, I don't think they're as pure as they believed they were. And when they start running into some of the problems, their reactions are similar to what they saw and criticized in the United States.
Right.
It's pretty well said.
I think France is a special case to a certain degree, though.
I think I kind of mixed those two things, but one, the overall story of Paris is a different issue, but out of that is coming a lot of comments from, what's her name, Le Pen, this lady, a female politician over there that's been very critical of immigration. And
mm-hmm.
So I think that's the aspect I was trying to get at there.
Yeah.
The whole ISIS or whoever is behind this Al-Qaeda link to these is... I cannot grasp that, and I just get filled with rage when I see these stories about what's happening in Paris.
Rage at who?
Rage at the senseless violence in the name of religion. And then I get rage. Rob, you'll like this. All the rage.
Like second,
I am filled with rage.
Secondary rage?
Oh, yeah. Some of the politicians trying to pull back from the religious aspect of it and say, well, they're not. Like, come on. How can you say that? They said they were avenging Muhammad.
Well, so the thing about France, in my opinion, is, I mean, you know, to relate it to your comment, France is not a homogenous nation, but they want desperately to be one. I mean, that is the way all of their laws are structured. They had the TV laws, right? Right. They are fiercely protective of French culture. They do not want it diluted in any way. And so they're hypersensitive to the immigration issue, because to them it seems like, you know, these people aren't French. They're not even close to French. And they don't want them, you know, they don't want them diluting French culture or, you know, their...
Maybe this is a whole episode onto itself, but it's like if you have a loose immigration policy, but you also want to keep your country homogenous, then you're going to create pockets of kind of outsiders that are never integrated. Well, what are the problems we've had in our nation as we're trying to grow up into the future centuries? It's us trying to integrate all this stuff together. You know, it's like, at least in our country, we've realized, hey, we're all in it together. We got to get somewhere. It's going to suck, and we got to figure out a way. You know, I think they're still trying to be like, well, we care. We're going to be French, and we'll let some people in because they need some help, you know? Well, then you're going to have this friction.
I see us pulling back from what you just said in the last, say, 20 years. It's been more about, well, I want to be in America, but I want to maintain my individual, or my, what I...
Heritage.
Yes, my heritage. That's the word. I should get
Good
a
job,
thesaurus.
Or him.
Or
just bring your brother
person.
More often.
And I think that's causing problems. When the country was first forming, you had a lot of immigrants, and they were in pockets, but they were struggling to become American.
Right.
And it made this country great for a while.
Yeah, for a short while.
Yeah.
Until the Whiskey Rebellion. A couple stories I wanted to point out. And see, Rob, you could do this too if you would like add things to the reading room.
Well, I don't know where the link is. Readingroom.com, I think.
Interesting story. The title is Progressives, Libertarians, and Selfishness. I got a kick out of that one, so I would encourage our listeners to read that one. Also, I put this one in here, Confessions of a Former TSA Officer. This is a guy that worked for the TSA for about 5 years. And for the last, I think, 2 years of his tenure there, he had started a secret blog where he was writing about all the crazy stuff he witnessed on the job. And now that he's no longer employed there, he has, you know, basically owned up to, you know, writing this blog. And he's done a number of interviews now about all the stuff that he saw. But, you know, he admits in there all of your worst fears are true. The full body scanners, yes, they were laughing at your genitals when they looked at them. You know, and he talks about the one guy who had been working there for like 4 years when they finally realized that his background check had never been completed. So, you know, that guy could have been from anywhere and been there, you know, to do any sort of nefarious thing. It's an interesting story. And I think it sheds light on what I've brought up on the show before, that the TSA and everything that we've done since 9/11, it's all security theater. None of it actually keeps us safer. All it does, it's intended to condition people to being searched, having their rights violated to get on an airplane. That's its only purpose. Rob is shaking his head.
We'll just let it go.
All right.
Let's see. Anything else in there? Oh, did you want to talk about the Larkin Rose interview?
Well, I just the one question. It kind of don't have a lot on it, but going back to the nation idea and mm-hmm. how he believes the United States is falling apart, and is, how did he put it? Is essentially
it's finished. Absolutely doomed.
Absolutely doomed. That was his word. And he was happy about this, saying that's the road
right.
that he needs to take.
Yeah, but he's a voluntarist or anarchist or whatever you want to call him.
My concern is something like that falls, it's not just going to, like, okay, well, the United States is no longer, and everybody here no longer has, is no longer bound by these laws and this, so we're all free. Well, somebody would come in, it would create a vacuum, and somebody's going to come in and
right.
pick up the pieces and do something with it. So that's it's not a good situation
right.
necessarily.
Yeah, I think we talked about this in the past. It's been a long time ago, but I mean the revolution's easy, right? It's what you set up after the revolution is over that's hard.
Yeah.
And you know, making that transition, if you can, making that transition smooth, that's the difficult part. And I think he says in that interview that, yeah, the U.S. is doomed. The part that sucks is that the government's going to get pretty vicious as it realizes that, you know, as it realizes it's losing its grip on power. And it's going to do all kinds of nasty things to its citizens as the empire crumbles,
yeah.
just like Rome did to its citizens.
But I'm even talking about after that.
Yeah, right.
So.
Yeah, and after that, what happens?
Yeah.
I don't know what happens.
Anyway.
But I'm confident that, you know, we can all come together.
I am not.
And figure it out.
I have zero confidence.
There's a website. I'll have to put a link in the show notes to this, but it's called the Survivor Library. And it's intended, have you? It's intended to be a repository of all useful knowledge, like in the event of, you know, a complete catastrophe and you know, society completely breaks down. This is supposed to be a library of, like, how to do everything. You know, so that we can rebuild society from scratch.
That's the question I've asked a few times. You know, how long would it take? Because I don't know how to make silicone wafers
right.
to make a cell phone.
Well, I don't think it even gets to that level of sophistication. It's like, how do you forge steel tools? And, you know, how do you purify water? And how do you weld? And how
along,
do you, you know.
Along those lines, several years ago, I bought a book, Old Country Knowledge, just for that purpose. You know,
really?
It's a lot about farming and this.
Man, I'd be terrible.
Is this the extent of your prepper?
Yeah.
Nation?
Well, and the six packs of beer and the chips that I mentioned before.
Yeah.
So those three items, taking them with me.
Are you a prepper, Rob?
I am not a prepper, and maybe in a future episode we could talk about maybe we could hire some Euro dude to show up on the show and just figure out if this prepper thing of this apocalypse thing. I mean, France is worried. I mean, do they have this prepper? Is this prepper thing a uniquely American
yeah.
sort of myth or fable that we tell ourselves? Like, are there French guys that are like got the bunker going?
Right.
Or, I mean, I think there's rural French people that are on their farm that are trying to get away from all of this stuff. But I mean, I think the idea of the Glenn Beck and the gold line and let's all make a bunker with a gun and a gold bar and a Jeremy six pack, I think is that might be a very American.
He means beer, not my stomach, not my abs.
I don't know for sure, but right. Yeah, that's my impression too, right. That it is right. A uniquely American
right.
thing.
Right.
And it stems from, you know, self-reliance yeah. is in our DNA, yeah. right? Right. I like to make that claim. I don't know that that's true either. Mm. I don't know that that's unique to the U.S., mm. but it certainly was true of the people who came over here and sure. started this country.
Right.
And I think that is what... You know, if you ask any, quote, prepper, the people who self-identify that way, that is what they hearken back to, right?
Right. And this is just maybe we end on this because it's my thought, so we should always end on my thought. I think it was a This American Life episode, but it had to talk about, it was a story about origin stories and how we love to tell ourselves origin stories. Of Hewlett Packard in the garage and Apple with Steve Jobs, and even when they're completely not true, we want
when they're
to
completely fabricated.
Right,
I don't like those stories. So, but go on.
You don't like them?
No, I don't like them.
No, stories. I think
it makes me feel like I should be doing that.
Exactly right. But I think that might be an American thing too, where we feel like, hey, all right, you made your company, good job, you know. But we feel like we have to put this mythology into how things started from scratch or. You know, I mean, heck, there could have been some guy with a venture capital fund, and he got $1 million because he made the right pitch, and he turned it into $10 million. But we're still gonna throw him in the garage with a computer. You know,
right?
It's like we have to do that to ourselves, and that might be an American thing. We were just a little country. Now look at us now. You know, little stories we tell ourselves, myths.
So should we do an episode about preppers?
We could.
Maybe we can solicit. Some of our listeners, if anybody out there is a prepper and you'd like to be a part of the show and answer some questions, get in touch with us. Let us know. We'd be interested in talking.
And we could fantasize about how terribly I would do in the post-apocalyptic world. Where it's
yeah.
like I had like a wheat seed and I tried to go to Google how to plant wheat seed and spell it perfectly and hit go and nothing would happen.
Good luck if
right.
the currency is in ink pens.
Oh, I got a stash at home. Don't worry. That's why I don't bring them here.
All right.
I think we're done.
We're done.
Good enough. We're
yeah. done. All right. I'd like to thank all of our listeners and certainly the ones who sent us feedback. I'm trying to shame the rest of you into sending us comments. I know you're out there.
I already be shamed that you're a listener, so what's a little more shame?
Thanks once again to Granite City Food and Brewery for hosting us, even though they put us in the corner.
You still haven't given us any free
Nobody
stuff
puts
ever.
Baby in the corner. All right. We will see you next time.
Good night.
Bye now.
There's safety in numbers.
Forget it.
But you will be.
We're recording a podcast.
Oh, podcast. Okay. So what's your topic?
So we meet here once a month. We drink beer and we talk politics. Okay.
Oh,
or
oh,
current
fine.
Events.
Or
whatever.
Current
event. Let's take a card.
I mean, very much so.
We talk about a lot of current events, like, you know, the last couple episodes we talked about Ferguson and the Michael Brown shooting and, you know, stuff like that.
Yeah. And
here's the thing about that is, like, because I don't record me.
All right.
But truly, so I teach at Clayton High School, and so we're very liberal. Clayton is very liberal. And we support our students in voicing their opinions. So when they're... voicing their opinions in support of Michael Brown, very much supported by students, faculty, staff. Then when you have the counter view, students are attacked. I mean, just almost attacked in class.
Right.
They, you know, they had an article in our newspaper and then on our it's called GNN TV network. And so feeling like that's the minority. Does it?
Oh, right.
So I kind of feel that way myself, too. It's like, you know, I support our police and I support everybody's rights. So anyway, so have you talked about that at all? I haven't listened.
Oh, yeah.
Oh, yeah.
Okay.
But I think it's because you're really you're supporting the position of power. Like it's an argument about power against against not power, right?
Against the little guy.
Against the little guy, but you're, I mean, so it's hard to stage a protest in support of power.
I agree, but we need to support. I think we have a police officer over there. I'm like, we need to support the people that serve and protect us. That's one thing that I really kind of resent a little bit. It's like, sure, we're not giving them enough credit. So,
right.
I don't know. I'm not an area, I hope not. And I'm not Barb Dover from
Playboy. I take exception to what Rob is saying by saying, well, you're supporting power. That's not.
That's not what I was supporting
when I took a certain view.
No,
I support law-abiding things.
But I'm just saying
the rule of law.
Yes. And you're charging an officer.
There are consequences.
There are definitely consequences.
There should be anyway.
But it's hard to make a voice for that. Like we know how oppressed people speak out against power. You rally, you march. If you're in Palestine, you throw rocks at F-16s. Whatever. We know how to do that. It's hard to make your voice supported for.
So now you're automatically saying he's oppressed.
I need my purse. I need a cowbell.
Yeah.
I've had three of these, so I'm a little baby.
You're doing great.
I am
excellent.
Really good. But since I can always talk. But the other thing is, what was I going to say? Do I need to tell my kids, like, if you're stopped by a police officer, you need to be polite, respectful, and do what they say? No, because number one, they know better than to get stopped by a police officer. And if they are, like my son did when he was speeding, he's law-abiding and polite, respectful.
There you go.
I assume your son's white, though.
Yes, and I have a very good friend who is, you know, she's black, and her husband, they're religious, the most gentle people you know, and he has been racially profiled in Clayton.
Well, of course he has.
Right.
However,
when he stops, when he's been profiled, it pisses him off. Heck yeah, it does, but he's polite.
Well, there's no reason not to be polite and respectful. All I'm saying is acknowledge that there's a different experience.
And I do agree with that.
For... you know, someone of color versus...
And you know what? There's also a different experience if we were to drive through that.
Yes.
This is not...
We've honest. Talked about that.
All right, so I'm going to give this to my son, Nick.
All right. Take as many as you like.
I like the way you started, like, oh, I'm not a political person. Here's a lot of awesome thoughts. Let me sit down. I'll give you some great things.
Bye,
good job. Bye.